Happy Wednesday to you folks, and welcome to Got Your Back, NHL Edition. As always, brought to you by our title sponsors, Kuma Outdoor Gear, where they've got a wide range of gear to fit all your needs, from tents and sleeping bags, travel games, pet products, and drinkware, and how about that switchback heated chair powered by Bluetooth technology, super comfortable and portable. KumaOutdoorGear.com is the website. Check out all they have to offer. So we say good morning to Pierre Lebrun. Bit of an abbreviated breakdown segment today, Pierre, because we have the general manager of the Ottawa Senators, Steve Staios, coming up. But lots of trade talk and such to get to. This is a busy time of year for you. As you hopped online there, you were head down burning up your phone. I guess that's the story of your life right now, pal.
It is. It's funny because it's the calm before the storm. You know, a year ago, Ryan, we had a number of trades leading up to deadline from 3 weeks out, as you may remember, significant trades. So there was kind of a constant news flow from 3 weeks right to deadline day. We have not really had that. We had the two big trades, you know, 2.5 weeks ago, but with Lindholm and Monahan back to back. But since then, nothing. And it's not from a lack of trying. And part of it, I think, is people waiting on the Calgary Flames to decide what they're going to do with Tanev and Hanifin, etc. That's definitely had some kind of impact on the market.
Oh, you would think it has to. Let's just hop right in to our breakdown segment brought to you by our good friends over at Kinprint. Can help you in your business with all of your branding needs. Visit kinprint.ca. We're going to deal with some other stuff first, but you took it to the trade front. Let's just go there. Like, it gets jammed up because there's one team that has, it's not just about, you know, defensemen necessarily, a couple of different positions. Pierre, it can really gum up the works. We've seen it in previous years. Is it going to be a scenario where a domino falls and then a bunch fall, you think, real fast after?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if Chris Tanev gets dealt at some point here in the near future, I think you'll probably see a flurry of activity right after that, because just look at the right side of the defense rental market. You have to separate Hanifin from Tanev, because there are teams specifically looking for right shot defensemen. The Dallas Stars looking for a right shot defenseman. They've made an offer on Tanev. The Toronto Maple Leafs looking for a right shot defenseman. There's a number of teams in that specific market. And so you got Tanev, you got Sean Walker of the Flyers, you got Matt Dumba of the Coyotes, Ilya Lyubushkin of the Anaheim Ducks, and the list goes on. Those are all right side rentals. Hanifin is interesting because obviously he's a left shot offensive D, having a great year. Tampa and Boston are among, I believe, four front running teams that have showed a lot of interest in him. But that's an interesting one. I mean, are they renting him out, or are they thinking of signing him?
Yeah.
I think if it's Tampa and Boston, it's probably rental. I don't know. It's hard to tell, but those are kind of separate markets is what I'm saying. I don't see an overlap between Hanifin on the left and the right shot D market led by Tanev.
Risk reward waiting for the first round pick, right? You can sit around waiting for that first round pick, hoping that the market gets there. And we understand why Craig Conroy is doing what he's doing. I mean, it's your job to maximize your investments. But at the same time, it probably makes you a little nervous every time he goes out there, because Chris Tanev, though he's proven himself to be durable, Chris Tanev is a player that lays it on the line, right? So can you get in your own way waiting for a return like this at times? I wouldn't want to be the one having to make that call.
Well, I know that there's a couple of times in the last few weeks where Tanev has temporarily left the game just very quickly for some kind of, and I can tell you from talking to someone that the Flames front office is like, and then he comes back and they all breathe a sigh of relief. And that's the double-edged sword. You're bang on. Like, I understand what they're doing. First of all, they're still winning games too, which is actually gumming up the works, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But, they're waiting for someone, I think, to slap down that first round pick. I don't think the offers that are on the table, including from Dallas, include a first-round pick right now. That could change, but right now I don't think they do. The Leafs can't get him without doing that because they don't even have a second-round pick. Vancouver has interest in Tanev. I believe the Oilers to some degree, Ryan. It's kind of a fascinating thing, and I also think that there are some teams that if they end up with him will want to have an idea of whether or not they can extend him. I think that would apply to Vancouver. I think that would apply to Toronto. I don't think it would apply to Dallas. I think Dallas, which, you know, they really like Tanev, but I think because of their situation with their payroll, it would really be purely a rental. which I'm sure is fine with Chris Tanev anyway if he has to be traded. But
what does the number on an extension look like for him, do you think? What's the dollar figure roughly of teams that are thinking about trading for him? Or what, like the Oilers, for example, we'll talk about them for just a second here. Let's say they trade for Tanev, and let's say they'll have to move money. Let's say they move Cody Ceci out and they bring Tanev in, and they feel you could make the argument, okay, there's an upgrade there on the right side. The question that Ken Holland will be facing is, what does your blue line look like next year? Because now you're fishing in the rental market for a right shot guy when Cody Ceci had a year left. So, you know, and Ceci is three and change, right? So what can you get on the open market to replace that if you watered yourself down for next year?
Yeah, I think he's in that $5 to $6 million market. I think it's less about AV though with Chris Tanev, Ryan, and more about term at his age.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people love his game. You know, there's a bit of a copycat league, as you know. Vegas won the Stanley Cup last year. What's the first thing you think of when you think of Vegas winning the Cup, Ryan?
The depth.
I think of their blue line.
Yeah, the big blue line, right? Yeah,
the warrior blue line protecting the net, impossible to get. Increased space, so on. A lot of teams are viewing Chris Tanev in the mold of a lot of those Vegas D, as in playoff warrior, the guy that actually pays the bills even more come playoff time than throughout 82 games when you want to manage him. And that's why there are a dozen teams, I'm told, that have reached out to Calgary and Chris Tanev.
Whew.
So he's that playoff mold guy, but you know, he's also up there. So you're asking me the question about his next contract. I think what's fascinating to me is what you love about the player is what would concern you about the term.
Yeah.
It seems unfair, but I mean the wear and tear because of the way he would go through a wall to win a hockey game for his team. And again, that's why there's so many managers out there that love Chris Tanev.
So here's the question then, as we talk about, you know, holding out for the first round, game after game after game here, at what point does Craig Conroy need to start sitting this or other players out? We kind of see it every year. It happens.
Yeah.
Tough to do because that team feels like they're in a playoff race and you start sitting players out and you lose 3 out of 4 and now your players are like, yeah, thanks.
Yeah, it is tough. So if you're a normal spot selling team, when I mean by normal spot, if you're a selling team that's out, usually about a week out, you know, 5 to 7 days out, you start sitting guys. But the Flames are right on the periphery of that race, right? I mean, I still think if you look at the math, it's difficult with all the teams in the West, you know, trying to fight for 7th and 8th. And I say 7th and 8th because as we tape this, Nashville and LA Kings tied in points. Yeah. So it's no longer just about the 8th spot, Ryan. But, the math is working against them. And, you know, listen, here's the other thing I would say, and you may disagree with me on this, and it's easy for me to say because I'm not in that Flames front office and I don't have an owner asking me about all this. The question I always ask about bubble teams at this time of year is this. If you slide in, do you think you have a Florida run in you? Mm-hmm. Do you think you can go to the Cup final? I don't think that's the case for the Calgary Flames. They're not getting past Dallas or Colorado. They're not getting past, probably Winnipeg in my mind. Now, the Pacific rivals are interesting. We just saw them beat Edmonton and Vancouver. People keep wondering how real are they. I think they're pretty real, but I don't see them beating Vegas. So my point is, if you don't think you have that kind of run in you, honestly, you got to look at the longer term here, and you got to make sure you get a return on your UFAs. To me, you have no
choice. That's true. But the interesting thing, though, Pierre, is that you can really punch a hole in your chances to go on a Cinderella run if you trade your starting goalie, too. You know, if you were keeping the goalie, if you still had the goalie, you look at your team and you're like, hey, man, when you got a tendy, you know, you got a chip and a chair and a chance and you know, but if you're really ripping the guts out of the thing, then it's tough to feel like you've got that chance.
The problem, Jacob Markstrom, as amazing as he's been this year, and I think he's been a top 5 goalie in the NHL, is that it's a one-team market. I mean, the Devils are the only team that have tried to trade for him, and that's not because other teams don't think he's having a great year. It's because goalie trades at that level are so rare in season, as you know. They're difficult to pull off. They're weird dynamics involved. And if the Devils – and now the Devils, you heard Darren Dreger talk about them briefly on Insider Trading Tuesday. I mean, the Devils now are teetering on, well, wait a minute. What are we doing here at the deadline?
Yeah.
And this road trip in California from New Jersey, they started with a win in San Jose, but this is going to be a big road trip this week. I think the Devils are waiting to get through Sunday's game in LA to decide exactly where they are. And, you know, if the Devils suddenly decide they might have a piece or two to sell, I'm not saying they will for sure, but if they do, Tyler Toffoli, pending UFA, all that guy does is score goals.
Oh, yeah. And that's a guy you would want for a playoff run, man. Like, that guy's a gamer and scores goals and competes, adds fire.
Cures your power play automatically just by standing 100%. In front of the goal. Yeah.
So the Toronto Maple Leafs go on a real nice run. And I don't know if that run changes Brad Treliving's thought process, gun sights at all, if it adjusts anything, right? Mm-hmm. That was a big question around Edmonton when they went on their run. Does that change what Ken Holland feels he needs to do? Feels pretty glaring what the Maple Leafs need to do here, Pierre. And back to reality last night, right? As Jeff O'Neill put it, stinking out the joint. But where is the sense of urgency at for the Maple Leafs to make that change here and maybe get ahead of it to just guarantee they get to make the change they want?
Yeah, they need a blue line upgrade in a perfect world. Right shot D. They dressed six lefties against Vegas. Mm-hmm. Which was, Liljegren out. That's not going to be the case most nights. But obviously, and listen, Brody's played most of his career on the right side, even though he's a lefty. So it's not like they're all technically lefties, but they were all left shot D. And so they need a right shot D. I just don't know if they can pull off a tandem deal. I know Brad Treliving loves a guy. He already signed him once in his career. But no one will say this from either organization, so this is just me. I feel like there's a Brad Treliving surtax from Calgary to get Chris Tanev. I think that's a trade.
You're not losing Craig that Conroy, trade.
Yeah, I think that Craig Conroy has to be able to look at Murray Edwards, the owner, in the eye and say, yeah, we made them pay. So because of that, I think it's more likely ends up in Dallas or Vancouver, Edmonton, who knows. But that's why if you're the Leafs, you got to look at other options. And, Lyubushkin played in Toronto a couple of years ago. He was acquired around this time, and he actually was pretty good. And he's, rugged defensive force. They actually would need that.
Sneaky good hitter, man.
Yeah.
Like, really good hitter.
Sean Walker, obviously, in Philly. The Flyers want a first, and they haven't been offered that yet for Sean Walker as we tape this, my understanding is. So there are other righties there, but I think it's pretty important for the Leafs to acquire at least one of those guys.
Let's talk about the Edmonton Oilers here briefly, the team that I cover here in town. My sense is unless something completely falls through the floor on the goaltending front, they will stand pat there. They'll go as far as Stuart Skinner is going to take them. The question becomes, how big an upgrade on the blue line? Do they drop a number six or a number seven, a veteran guy in? I believe that's most likely. But Pierre, to me, it's a right winger who clearly fits on the top two lines, like has to clearly fit on that line with Leon Draisaitl. And if you don't find that guy, then go get a center instead. For me, that's the logic that the Oilers follow.
Move McLeod around, I guess. Yeah.
And that allows you to move McLeod around. That guy probably is on your list of players who can move up too. There's no point in going and getting another tweener winger who isn't quite a fit in the top six and can't play center. To me, there's no point adding another winger to the roster of guys that audition there. Third line center or a clear second line right winger.
I agree. And, there are certainly options at the wing there. I mean, again, I've said this before, and I know that the Oilers internally have talked about it a lot, but if Jordan Eberle truly becomes available, I love the story. As a journalist, I love the story of a return to Edmonton. But I also know that he's a veteran player who could deal with the moment, I mean, he could deal with the moment and the pressure and the spotlight of arriving in Edmonton for a playoff run. But there are lots of guys. Pittsburgh, I think, has to trade Gensel, but that's going to be a heavy price. We just talked about Tyler Toffoli. What if, what if the Devils decide to put him out there?
Mantha has popped his head up a little bit here recently too, hey? And there's a history there's no question that Holland.
Washington, I wrote about this last week, the Caps were trying to go right to close to March 8th and then truly decide if they were in or out of the race, because it's important to them to stay in the race as long as they can. But they've got Mantha, Pacioretty. I believe Pacioretty's a name that the Oilers have kicked around. He's got a full no move, another pending UFA. So yeah, the Caps, you know, Tarasenko in Ottawa. So the Oilers have, I think, lots of options. And what I'm seeing right now, Ryan, and it could change, but especially if Toffoli goes on the market, I see the options outnumbering the actual teams buying. Right. So that should help the buyers closer to March 8th, because I feel like we just mentioned way more names than our teams looking to upgrade at that position, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, keep an eye on Adam Henrique, I think, too. The dollar figure is a little bit high. You'd need to get another team involved to half the salary again, but the guy kills.
Same with Mantha, by the way.
Yeah, same with Mantha. Yeah, he play, kills penalties, natural center, can play the wing. And I did speak to a former coach who said that he can play right wing if need be. It's probably, you know, not the preferred position, but he's a versatile enough player that he can do that. And I think that's an interesting name for Edmonton, but we shall see what Ken Holland gets up to. Where are you at on the Vancouver Canucks? Probably some frustration here recently. They got ahead of it early. Do you see another moving of the dial in their near future?
Well, we mentioned Tanev. I mean, I think one more D in some form, you know, when you're a team that wants to go deep in the playoffs, that's a natural place to look to add. And they tried to have Tanev included in the Lindholm deal. Give him credit for trying, but the pieces weren't fitting for Calgary at that moment. But I think they still have interest in him, among other D. And obviously you got all the Pettersson noise of the last week. And I think it's mostly noise. I mean, I will say that it is. I have been able to confirm that the Canucks have heard from a couple of teams just checking in and saying, what's going on here? And that's because he hasn't signed extension. He hasn't been willing to engage in contract talks, hasn't given the green light to his agents, Pat Brisson and JP Bear of CAA, to engage meaningfully in contract talks with the Canucks. So I think that's why the Canucks have gotten calls. Mm-hmm. And that has led to a lot of
podcast
talk show airtime being used up in Vancouver the last few days. I will just say this, and I've been wrong before, but for the life of me, I cannot imagine how it would ever make sense to trade the guy before March 8th when you're in first place of the Western Conference. I mean, obviously, you might say, well, it depends what they get in return. I understand that, but this has to be an off-season discussion. Either you sign him long-term this summer, or you go to Vegas at the draft and say, guess what, everyone? We've got quite a player that's on the trade market now. This has to be a June conversation. You know, it's either sign long-term, which he may very well do, or it's a Matthew Tkachuk situation where he's RFA for one more year before he's UFA, and then, you know, time to...
Can you imagine?
Time to see what's out there. But the idea, I mean, again, I could be wrong. I don't understand the scenario in which, if you're Canucks management, it makes any sense to even take any trade discussion seriously right now between the next eight, nine days. No. Like,
take him on
doing?
The run.
You're in first place. Yeah.
Yeah. Take him on the
run. Again, it's not like he's walking out the door.
No.
He's not walking out the door July 1st. He's an RFA. He's not a UFA.
These rules exist for a reason. So precisely that. You do not have to do that. You don't have to trade him. Why would you not take him on this run, see what happens? Maybe he'll have a different feeling. Maybe he'll have a different feeling after. You never know what you might. You go through the battle with the boys and you come out the other side and hey, you know.
Yeah. And I'll point one last thing out on that is that if he's unwilling at this point to engage in contract talks with the Canucks, why would he be willing to engage in contract talks with a team he doesn't know? Which presumably, if you're a team that was actually getting serious about trading for him in the next 8-9 days, you would need to know what it costs to sign him.
Yeah.
Well, why would he be in a position where he doesn't even know this team? He's like, go ahead and extend with them. I don't see that. I think if he's wanting to wait till the end of the season, that's probably a reaction that he's going to have for every team in the league, not just the
Canucks. I mean, think of the list of things guys are looking for, right? They want most of them. They want a chance to win, right? Well, look at where the Vancouver Canucks sit right now. And if he stays, they've got a hell of a better chance to win. He immediately increases those chances. And then you want to live in a place, you know, maybe a place that you like if you're a young person and, you know, well, Vancouver's a nice city and such. So I'm not sure. You know, unless it has to do purely with location. Yes, I'd like to live in that state because of state tax or something like that. You've made up your mind on that front, but why wouldn't you?
You never know. I mean, some guys end up you know, saying I want to go somewhere where maybe hockey's not number one and I have a bit more of a quieter life away from the rink. I'm not suggesting that's happening here with Pettersson. I don't know what's going through his mind, to be quite honest.
You're going to chat with... Oh, go ahead. Continue.
No, I just got to say. And it's none of my business.
There you go. Exactly. Mind your own business, Pierre. Jeez. Full disclosure, you're going to chat with Steve Staios here shortly. I'm in a time crunch here as we tape this morning. The Oilers have an early game tonight, so I got to go blazing out the door to get to the rink. But let's chat about them real quick. And disclosure, you haven't talked to Staios yet at the time we're taping this. So what's your sense here on the level of aggressiveness? There's Tarasenko sitting out there. There's been some Chychrun talk too, which is kind of interesting, right? He was a big acquisition and had contract left and was supposed to be part of things moving forward. And I imagine you'll ask some of this to Staios and he will not answer any of it. So give me your opinion, Pierre. What do you think it'll look like for him?
Yeah, and Dreg's touched on this on Insider Trading, but you know, one of the things he said, and I agree with from what I'm hearing too, is that I don't really see the urgency in a Chychrun trade. He signed. To me, this sounds like an off-season conversation, if at all. I mean, he may just play in Ottawa the rest of his career. But the idea that this somehow had to get figured out for March 8th, it doesn't... Like, this is a time of year where pending UFAs, you have to figure them out. That's what the trade deadline's about. Now, some teams try to make hockey deals for players on term, but mostly what we're seeing are rentals. He's not a rental. So I agree with Dregs that it's probably more unlikely that he moves. Tarasenko's a UFA. So I don't really see a future for him in Ottawa. He has a full no move, which complicates things as far as the return and the list of teams he might be willing to go to. But my sense of it from a few conversations is that he just wants to go somewhere and have a chance to play playoff hockey and reintroduce himself to the market July 1st. So, you know, would Vegas with Mark Stone and LTIR, would Vegas be a potential destination for Tarasenko or for Jake Guentzel? Keep an eye on the Golden Knights. We know they're not shy and aggressive.
Well, how's this top six sound? Evander Kane, Connor McDavid, and Vladimir Tarasenko, Nugent Hopkins, Draisaitl, and Zach Hyman.
I'll tell you what, I mean, I know it's 5 years ago, but Tarasenko was pretty darn good in those playoffs when they won the Cup in St. Louis. And that would be 100%. The other thing here is that you know this better than me from the team you cover, but part of the Corey Perry appeal was the Cup ring and that there aren't a lot of champions in that room. So that would be another, you know, depending whoever they get, someone with a Cup ring would be an added bonus, I think.
All right. Great trade talk as always, Pierre, and we look forward to continuing to follow you at The Athletic and on Insider Trading as well. Before we get to our interview with Steve Staios, do have to ask you about Matt Rempe. He's been the story in the National Hockey League over the last week or so. Young guy, big guy, tough guy, fighting all comers, scoring some goals, giving great interviews. You know, there have been a lot of elements that have been a fantastic story, and you feel excited for the kid. But there have also been a few pieces of this, taking some pretty hard punches, pretty hard fall to the ice with no helmet on. It also kind of gives you this, I don't know if it does the same thing for you, bit of a pit in your stomach too, wondering where this might go and maybe wanting somebody to hit the brakes a little bit on the pace at which this whole story is going and the way this kid has hit the NHL. So what's your sense on it, Pierre? In a lot of ways, a great story, but also you want it to stay a great story.
Yeah, but I mean, first of all, you know that I'm not the fighting guy. I believe in the NHL without fighting, but I've not beat that drum as loudly as I used to because I understand how many people still want it as part of the game. And frankly, because it has kind of disappeared a bit over time, I haven't had to beat that drum as much. I love that he's trying to make a name for himself. I get that it's exciting for Rangers fans. I hope he does not fight for a while. I really worry about the knocks he's taken here. I hope that Peter Laviolette has taken him aside and said, you don't have to, you know, you've proven yourself. You've made your name now. Now establish yourself as a player. I hope that's what we see. But the reality is, because he's so young, that if he gets, you know, challenged to a fight in the next few days, he's probably going to take it on.
Yeah. And, you know, I do a podcast here locally with Jason Strudwick, who, you know, was a tough player in that league for a long time and did a lot of that. And the point he makes, as much respect as I'm sure everybody has for his willingness, clearly needs to, you know, doesn't play a lot of defense when he gets into scraps. And as Strutty said, and I'll take Strutty's word on this, needs to learn how to do it a little bit, right? Needs to be able to protect himself in some of these fights. When you do that job, if you're all offense, it can get real tough real quick. And he saw that already, right, with his scrap in Columbus. So I agree. I think, you know, for somebody in the organization to pull him aside, hopefully, you know, some whether it's someone in management or his head coach, and just say, hey, you know, love the willingness. Just because someone wants to have a chit-chat with you in warm-up doesn't need, mean you need to fight them that night. This stage stuff, off the draw, we expect none of that from you. Protect your teammates. Be a good teammate. If anything happens in-game, so be it. But we do not have this expectation of you. I think that's where the league is at now. This stage stuff, off the to me, it's antiquated. It's long gone. It's completely unnecessary. Guys don't need to make the tour anymore. The new guy doesn't need to come into the league and take on. It's just not where the game is at. So it's been a great story. You're super happy for him, but you do want him to pump the brakes quite a bit here.
And I get why Rangers fans, a lot of them love it. I mean, I'm not going to deny how a lot of old school fans miss this part of the game. It's just harder for me to embrace it again. It's not like I won't watch if it's happening. I'm not going to be a hypocrite. But when you know more about CTE and everything else, it just makes you uneasy, quite frankly. And, you know, that's where I am on that.
Yeah, if it happens through the course of a game, the game itself and the players in it believe there's still a place for that in the game, and so be it. But as I said, that stage stuff and all that's not, I don't think he needs to be engaging in that. But I mean, he's lived his whole life trying to get here, and now he's here. And you just want to hang on to it. You can only imagine the way that must feel for him. So certainly happy for him. It's been quite the week for him. All right, great stuff, Pierre. That was our breakdown brought to you by our great friends over at Kin Print. All right, the Ottawa Senators, one of the teams to keep an eye on as they head towards the trade deadline. And Pierre getting a chance to sit down with new general manager, Steve Staios.
And as advertised, joining us now and got your back, Steve Staios, GM of the Ottawa Senators. And Steve, Ryan Rashog is not here in this interview, because he was so upset that you left the Edmonton Oilers organization after last season that he refused to take part in this interview. I'm just kidding. He's obviously at Oilers practice right now, so I'm flying solo here. But looking forward to this chat, Steve. And that's a good place to start. I mean, to remind our listeners and viewers, you had quite a decision to make. You were a key part of that Oilers front office, but obviously a special opportunity with Michael Andlauer in Ottawa. Maybe you walk us through that decision, leaving the Oilers for the Senators.
Well, the Edmonton Oilers, Pierre, mean a lot to me as an organization. I think going back as a player, I was still trying to find my footing as an NHL player. And when I landed in Edmonton, I was given a great opportunity with a great coaching staff and general manager and the leadership and the with Kevin Lowe and Craig McTavish and Charlie Huddy and the group there. So the Oilers organization means a lot to me and my family, and we still have some of our best friends that live in Edmonton. But as far as my career, it was a wonderful year with Edmonton, and you know, the situation sort of unfolded where you know, this opportunity in Ottawa was there. And obviously, with my, you know, previous working relationship with Michael Andlauer and the Hamilton Bulldogs, you know, it seemed to be a good fit.
Well, and since you've arrived in Ottawa, it's been an eventful few months. Lots going on, including a change at the GM position and a GM search, and then you end up deciding to hire a guy named Steve Staios as GM. I mean, are you sure about that? How do you feel about that hire, with obviously stepping in that role?
Yeah, it was a unique process. Obviously, Michael is the man in charge and making the decisions. So, as everybody knows, we had a lot of things that were thrown at us here in Ottawa early on, including, a half-year suspension, injuries, and then so obviously the Dadonov situation. And Michael had made the decision that he wanted to make a change. At that point in time, we looked at it from all angles. We had a lot of names and structure that I had presented to Michael. At the end of the day, he makes the decisions. And so he was comfortable with this structure moving forward. And, you know, we've continued to build off of it. I think when you look at, when you go start looking at names on a GM search, there's obviously many capable people out there that that could do the job. And we continue to look down the hallway and Ryan Bonus and his continued ascension in the game and his experience and winning experience with the Pittsburgh Penguins. So we felt that we had a candidate there that certainly could work alongside me in the GM position to continue to move this thing forward. And then obviously with the major addition of David Poulin and all the experience that he brings and the wisdom and just really the type of person that we want in and around our group as well. And I'd go so far to say that Pooley's probably one of the most, I don't know, all the executives in the National Hockey League, but got to meet a lot of them, Pierre. And I think you could say that, easily say that Dave Poulin is one of the most understated and extremely capable. So we feel good about that structure. I know Michael talked about having a two-headed monster. I think that we're even deeper than that in that regard, and we'll continue to build off of it.
Well, we definitely miss Pooley at TSN, so you owe us one there. So here you are running your first trade deadline as a GM. I mean, you saw Ken Hull and the group last year in Edmonton run one. How's it been going? What are the calls like? I mean, you know, you've heard a lot of different stories over the years of first-time GMs at this time of year and how those conversations go. But in your case, you know, what's it been like having to really live off your phone right now?
It's been good. There's a process that we've put in place and an understanding of what maybe our needs are. We're using the trade deadline as one opportunity to continue to build on this young group. So yeah, there's certainly a process in place and players that we have as far as types of players that we have targeted and value moving forward, and it can continue to support this very good young core that we have here in Ottawa. And you know, when you look at our group and just the youth and, you know, in a most respectful way, the lack of experience, you know, you'd like to see if there's the opportunity to bring some veteran people in here to support it. But trade deadlines are just one opportunity to be able to build off of that. And typically, as you know, Pierre, the market really dictates on what you can do and how much you can do. But as far as us entering it, we're involved in trying to address some areas. But we're also very patient and understanding that these things do take some time. And like I said, the trade deadline is just one opportunity.
Right. The offseason can be just as fertile a time period on the calendar to go add some of those leadership and veteran types that you've talked about. But you do have a more pressing decision to make on a guy like you know, Vladimir Tarasenko, Steve, who's a pending UFA. This is really the time of year where pending UFAs, you know, come into the forefront if your team's not in a playoff spot. Obviously, he's got a full no trade, but as you know, I know there's not, you can't share everything, but where would you think that situation is? No doubt, I know from talking to other people around the league, there's interest. So where do you think that's headed with Tarasenko?
Yeah, I won't go so far to talk about the personal dialogue, but on any of our players, but certainly I think as you see where our team is in the standings and you see an incredibly impactful player that's won a Stanley Cup, there's going to be a high level of interest for sure. You mentioned it, he's rightfully negotiated a no trade clause within his contract. And so there's a process there as far as working with a player, any player, if you are going to move them on that as well. But certainly there's a level of interest in these types of players that's very high at the trade deadline. I really like what Vladdy has brought to our group. He comes in on a 1-year deal and continues to prove his, you know, his ability to play big games and an understated leadership as well. He plays the game the right way. I think he probably got typecasted a little bit in his career as just being an offensive player, but he's certainly a well-rounded player for me.
It's kind of like I'm championing with the Blues in 2019. There was a tweet over the weekend, and I don't always want to react to these things, Steve, but I think it caused quite a stir in your market, so I am going to ask you. But there was a tweet suggesting that you were talking to teams about Brady Tkachuk trade-wise. I'll let you address that.
Yeah, that could not be further from the truth. I just, you know, I don't follow on social media. I do get, you know, our communications people alert me to things like that. There's obviously no truth to that. Like we're building this team around Brady Tkachuk, you know, and the type of person and the type of player and the type of leader that he is. You know, he means everything to the organization, and he brings it every night along with our core group of players. And, you know, it's a matter of time and a matter of nurturing this group. I think, you know, when I talk about bringing in veteran players, it's really to support this young group and to support Brady and Tim and the rest of the group. Claude Giroux's done a phenomenal job of that, but I don't, you know, you could always use those guys that we're the fifth youngest team in the league, you know? So say we're three years younger than, you know, these Stanley Cup contending types of teams, but it's 3 years younger across the board. So that adds up to a lot of years and a lot of games played. And really that's really it. But certainly, Brady is, the leader that we need in this room. He is everything that as advertised. I'm just looking to try and do my best to support him.
Jacob Chychrun's a name again, and you can't control when other teams maybe want to talk to you about a player. Your phone's going to ring, but Jacob Chychrun's a name that's been out there because of that. I mean, he's a, you know, very good defenseman. How would you frame where that is right now as far as his future with your team?
Well, I mean, if I'm on the other side of things and looking at our team, he's a player that I'd be calling about as well. And, you know, it is a bit disappointing, and maybe I guess the players, as a player, you got to learn how to deal with this, just being an NHL player and the amount of attention, especially if you're an elite player like Jacob. But, you know, conversations happen all the time and names get bounted about all the time. And, you know, like I said, I think I'd be calling about Jacob Chychrun myself if I was looking to add a top defenseman. So, I mean, again, disappointing that it came out. I think that we do our best to keep these things in house for out of respect for the players in particular. But certainly, it's that time of year, so you know these things do happen.
My last question for you, Steve, and thanks again for taking the time, but. I think it's been fun to see Jacques Martin behind the bench, especially for an old guy like me, seeing him back there, and it brings back some memories. But, you know, what's your sense? And I know what you said, obviously, when you made the coaching change, but what's your sense of, you know, where it's headed with the head coach job after the season and your expectations there?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, when I decided to make the change with the head coaching position, you know, you start to, no different than, I guess, when we talk about the management structure, mm-hmm. You start looking at what you really need. You really break down what you really need and the philosophy and where our team was at. You know, I brought Jacques in to support DJ and the coaching staff. I thought he was going to be, he was a great sounding board and a calming presence for the previous group. There were indications of improvement within that group. Certainly when we go to make the change, everything our team needed at this point in time with the youth, you know, what is everything that Jacques Martin is all about. And to be able to bring in that type of experience at that time, you know, was a real bonus for us. And so it took a little bit of time, you know, those are players that have played a certain way for a very long time, and it takes time to get to for the new coach to come in, and Jacques's done and really implement what he needs and hold our players accountable. And I think we've seen great signs of improvement, maturity within that group. And to have the benefit of having Daniel Alfredson alongside Jacques with bringing the philosophy and the discipline, the structure, and then you have Alfie there to be able to continue to deliver that message and really be able to relate to these players. I've seen great improvements as a team and in our individual play. So couldn't be more pleased with the job that they're doing.
And just to be clear, because I mean, were you still looking to do a coaching search and in the off season, or where is that at right now?
Yes, we will. I mean, and Jacques will be part of that as well. I think that, you have that type of experience, and he's laying the foundation for this group. And, I'll continue to I've had great dialogue with Jacques prior to bringing him in, as we brought him in, and the process and the plan. He cares deeply about the Ottawa Senators and wants us to have success. I see him being a part of this moving forward.
Great. Well, Steve, thanks for joining us. You're going to be a busy man here. You're working your first NHL trade deadline as a GM, and you certainly lived it as a player. So you have that side of it too, as you deal with things here. But thanks for your time, and good luck here over the next 8-9 days.
Thanks, Pierre.
All right, that'll wrap up the podcast for this week. Pierre, a bit of a different schedule next week, given that the trade deadline is just a couple of days out. So we might push to a post-trade deadline podcast next week. I know how busy you're going to be, so I will bid you farewell today, my friend, and Godspeed on that telephone. Happy hunting for the stories and the scoops. It's a crazy week for you, hey?
It's that time of year. I will say that, I guess I get asked this a lot, I will tell you that I actually find June around the draft busier and crazier than trade deadline, which is not to say trade deadline won't be crazy, but the quality of the moving parts and the kind of impactful decisions now that are made in the offseason around the draft tend to be a little more earth-shattering. And so I find that time actually a little more stressful.
Right on. Well, we look forward to reading your space in The Athletic and watching you on Trade Center on TSN. Thanks, pal.
All right.
All right. Take care, everybody. Thank you so much for your downloads and your subscriptions. Thanks for paying attention to us here on Got Your Back NHL Edition. And a big thanks, as always, to our title sponsor, Kuma Outdoor Gear. Have a great week, everybody.